So you went to the solicitor?
Well, I wrote to him. I never met him. And he wrote back, I thought, a rather offensive letter, thinking that I was trying to find out what was in her will, which wasn't the case at all. But shortly afterwards, I think she slightly amended her will, and he wrote to me and said, I have now ascertained her wishes. But he didn't tell me what they were. And then much later, I think it was after she'd broken her hip, I did get an opportunity. She started, more or less started the subject. She gave me an opening. And I did then ask her, and she, it turned out she wanted to be cremated, and then her ashes put with those of her sisters in Newbury. And I know this reminds me, because it's the same sort of thing. This was when she broke her hip, which she was very annoyed about, because it was her own fault. She sat on the edge of her bed and missed it and fell onto the floor, so she was furious about it. And it was a bad break. She was well over 90 at the time. And when the surgeon sent in his bill, before he sends in his bill, her doctor, she went to a fairly elderly woman doctor, asked me if I thought she'd be justified, if she could afford to pay for a private nurse, I think it was. And I said, I have no idea, but I will ask her solicitor. So I asked him, and he, again, was very unwilling to say anything, but he said, you can say there is no need to economise. So she had this private nurse. And then when the bill came in, she refused to pay it, it was so high, and she also refused to pay the surgeon's bill. And we had great difficulty over this. And she got it in her head that I had told the doctor that they could spend as much money as they liked, and they'd all cooked up this terrible bill because they thought she was so rich. And I mean, you're quite nasty to me about
that.
Yes,
that's very difficult, isn't it? I can see how it all happened.
Well,
I see
how it all happened. And it was all cleared up in the end. She didn't pay it. Very, very. And then she said, he hasn't even set it properly. I said, Kathleen, if he hadn't set your hip properly, you would not be walking the way you are now.
She got cross with herself, did she? About other things, not just that.
She got cross with herself, yes.
I mean, presumably she... Well,
she got very cross with herself when she got into muddles. Well, who doesn't? I mean, I get cross with myself because my memory isn't as good as it used to be. Mm. And she, latterly, when she made slips up with things, she used to get very angry with herself.
But also angry with other people. I mean, was she a cross person, would you say? I mean,
no, she wasn't a cross person, but she could... She could be very sharp, but I wouldn't say she hadn't got a cross nature. No, she had a rather sweet nature, and it's a curious mixture.
Yes, yes.
I think it's the crossness is of an intelligent person when they realise they made a mistake.
I understand. I mean, it's her rationality,
yes,
where things
yes.
ought to go smoothly and sensibly, and
yes,
they don't.
Yes.
You get cross when they don't.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. What about health? I mean, did she have any views about how to keep well and that sort of thing?
She wasn't at all a fusser about her health. She didn't really take much care of herself. And she took against her doctor at one moment, who was very good with her, in fact. I think again, she said she never came to see her, and then when she did, she sent it out in enormous bills. But her doctor was could be very rude. She was never rude to me, but she was very rude to the poor child on one or two occasions. And she was rather like Kathleen in a way, and an old friend, and was terribly good to her in her last illness, and very helpful to me too, and to everybody. But she wasn't at all robust looking ever, but she had this great sort of wiry toughness and never made any fuss about her health at all.
She wasn't a vegetarian or anything like that?
No. But she had a really frightfully small appetite, just pecked at her food.
Well, because it's rather good for you, actually,
wouldn't it?
I mean, we all eat too much,
yes.
I think, don't we? At least I do, I'm sure,
yes.
And a lot of other people.
And I think they're all like that. I don't think any of them took any interest in what they ate.
Mm. That sort of clarifies quite a lot. But when I saw her, she had a rather ugly sort of boil or something on her lip.
She'd always had that.
Oh, I see. I hadn't realized. I thought perhaps that was something she
She had that, and I think it's just one of these sort of blood vessel things, and I never spoke about it, but I believe it, when it's on the lip, it can't be operated on.
I see. How awful.
She can't have had it all her life, because it doesn't show in early photographs, but she's had it more or less for as long as I can remember. It probably perhaps got a bit bigger.
Mm.
And it was very noticeable.
Mm. You say she had a housekeeper. Is it from when she had her hip accident? Previously,
yes.
She hadn't had one.
Before that, she just had the char, who didn't cook. At least she sort of do a very simple meal, but she basically didn't like cooking. And it's when she was confined to the flat and also someone really had to be. Before she had the housekeeper, I'm thinking back now, she had a very nice Canadian woman as a paying guest for about a year, who said someone should be in the flat at night with her. And this Canadian woman, she used to cook up very nice little meals, which she was not supposed to do, and was not getting paid for, but she used to see that she ate properly.
Mm. But otherwise, it was just a charwoman, really, until
eight years,
wasn't it?
Yes.
And then she had a housekeeper as well as a charwoman?
Yes. Well, the charwoman was getting very elderly, and she came, I think, nearly, but she didn't come at weekends. But she would always come in an emergency. You could actually rely on her to if there was an emergency, she'd get out of bed in the middle of the night and come.
And your aunt did cook then, did she?
Well, she would sort of heat up something out of a tin.
Mm.
It wasn't my aunt, incidentally. Everyone always thinks she was my aunt. She was my first cousin once removed.
Sorry, your first cousin once removed, yes.
isn't such a close connection.
Yes, of course, I'd forgotten.
Yeah.
So, in fact, she really is very like Lady Stocks. Lady Stocks, if you gave her half a chance, would have eaten out of a tin. I mean,
yes.
She did. She loved tin beans.
Yes. Well, Kathleen loved tin beans and fish fingers. I mean, I went up unexpectedly there, I can't think why, more or less at lunchtime. She said, do join me for lunch, and I was given one fish finger for lunch, which is... She had no idea that I might want a bit more. One fish finger was enough for her, you see.
Well, we've got sort of really, in a way, in your contact with her, up to that period when you went to Geneva, and then afterwards you saw her sort of rarely, did you?
Yes. Yes.
What about the Second World War then? Where was she? What was she doing then?
Well, she went on, I think, two lecture tours to America. She certainly went on one for the Ministry of Information, and that was a great success. And that I have got some papers about that, and she mentions it in her Who's Who entry, that I think she went twice and sort of spoke about it in British war efforts, and it was always, not always, but often from a woman's angle, and then also latterly, sort of what are we going to do after the war, what's the peace movement going to do, and what's going to happen to the army, going to resuscitate the League, I imagine. And I can't remember where in the chronology came her tours to Australia and New Zealand.
So she went on quite long overseas.
Yes. She loved travelling.
Did she?
Yes, the whole family loved travelling. And they were all in their younger days, great walkers and climbers. We used to go to Switzerland. And there are photographs of these ladies with skirts touching the ground on top of quite high mountains. You wonder how they ever got up there.
And that applied to Dame Kathleen all through her life?
She was always a great walker, yes.
Was she really?
Yes.
Even, of course, when she got knocked over by that?
Well, then, she, by that time she couldn't really go for walks at all.
But you know, it's the same spirit, isn't it, going on, isn't it?
Well, she was trying to get a taxi, I think. I can't remember the circumstances of it. It was really so near here. I know she'd been to Universal Arts to see about a housekeeper. That's it. And she'd come, instead of letting them ring up for a taxi for her, she thought she'd just hail one in the King's Road. And there's a garage in the corner there, and this woman was either going in or out of the garage, very, very slowly, obviously. And she didn't get out of the way quick enough.
How old was she then?
Well, she was over 90 then.
Was she?
And that was... But that was after the broken hip, yes.
So she then had to go to bed, presumably, and did that cause any problems?
No. She was only a bit shocked. She wasn't really hurt by that. But then her final illness, she had... she died in December. I think it was in August. She had what the doctor thought was a slight cerebral hemorrhage and told us that this is the beginning of the end. And she was unconscious for, I think, for half a day or a bit longer. And then I remember going to see her and she said, oh, I shall be up tomorrow. Of course I shall be up tomorrow. Oh, a lot of fuss about that. I think she was up to. I mean, she got over that, but she was never the same after that.
I see, yes. But there's a sort of fight for life, in a way,
yes.
All the way through.
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, poor thing, she took an awful long time to die. I mean, she had a terrific hemorrhage, which should have killed her. And the doctor, very sensibly and in agreement with me, kept her very, very heavily sedated, because she kept trying to get out of bed. And she had to give her more and more massive doses to keep her quiet. And there was absolutely no chance of her recovering, but she went on for about 2 or 3 days when any average person would not have collapsed from the shock of it.
Was she a person who was, in a way, always looking forward, I mean, and not looking back? I mean, was she very interested in current affairs?
Oh, yes, very. Very. She liked looking back on her, as many people do, her memory of her childhood grew more vivid.
Sort of details that you mentioned,
yes.
Like sort of lacing your boots
yes.
up.
Yes. And, let me see, it was when she was before all these accidents, she was interviewed by the BBC, who were doing a series on life in Victorian times. And she was very annoyed with the interviewers because she said they tried to make her say the servants had a miserable time. And she said, our servants, of course they were our best friends, they were all on the best of terms. She was talking about how when she was a child of about 5, I think, and of course the servants were, they lived in terrible conditions. She was incapable of visualising that.
Yeah.
The servants were kind to the little girls and were treated as friends for the little girls, but she wouldn't. She couldn't realise that they must have worked under bad conditions. She was frightfully annoyed when it was suggested, not that her family in particular, but in general, for a lot of the servants in those days, was pretty hard.
What about class, really? I mean, can you sort of say anything about her attitude to class? Was she classless, would you say, or was she decidedly middle class? That's a difficult question. I just wondered if you had anything to say about that.
No, I would say she wouldn't be at ease with the working class.
Mm. Too intelligent in a way, or too intellectual in
yes.
a way.
Yes, I never saw her with any apart from her char, but I don't think that she would she never, as politicians do, have sort of addressed meetings where you had a mixture of, I can't see her addressing a meeting of factory workers, for instance.
Yeah. It wasn't her sort of milieu.
No. I would say completely middle class.
But not snobbish either.
Slightly, perhaps, but only of her period.
Yes.
I mean,
not sort of boasting of her connection
She used to rather boast of her military, but very proud of her father's military background.
That's odd, isn't it?
More so as she got older.
Why is that? Because I mean, it doesn't really fit with
no,
her
it doesn't,
piece.
No, doesn't at all.
Sort of involvement at all.
No. But I don't. But of course, when she did her early social work, she mixed with them.
Yes, but then in a very different sort of relationship than one
yes,
could possibly
yes.
have now, I suppose.
But I don't think she would have felt at ease, as I say, in a group of factory workers, or a group of housewives from a very poor part of London. I don't think she would have known how to talk to them. I think that she would have been unable to stop herself from talking down to them.
Yes, yes. Again, it's just...
Which is simply on being of that age and that background.
What about newspapers? Did she read the newspapers every day?
Oh, yes, yes. She read the Times every day.
Right up till the end?
No, because in the end, I think she couldn't see. Mm. She used to listen to the wireless. And I used to, being a Times reader myself, but one of the things we used to discuss what the Times had said about this and that. I think at one time she took the Guardian too, but... and then she used to read all these United Nations publications and...
How did she actually spend her spare time while you knew her? I mean, did she have any leisure much? I mean, or recreations much? There's no art, I think you said.
She loved going on holiday, and she used to go with her friend Frieda White. She went several times to France with her when she was quite old there. Frieda White wrote one or two very good guides who'd been worked for the League of Nations Union.
Mm.
And then in her, relatively old, she was at least 10 years younger than Kathleen, if not more. And they were close friends, and they used to go off on holidays together, either on the continent or in this country. Frieda White had a car. And then they went to Corsica, Sicily when she was well over 80.
Did they?
Because I'd been shortly before, and I gave and she loved travel.
So that all fits in a way, doesn't it, with her international interests?
Yes,
yes. Was she patriotic, actually? I mean, was she proud of being English?
Yes, I would say she was.
Mm.
And she became to me, slightly jingoist.
Did she really?
And latterly. Well, yes. I mean, I say that all these terrible blacks having the same votes as the other countries in the United Nations, absolute rubbish.
Mm. One ought not to judge a person, of course, by what they say at the very end of their life.
Not
anyway,
at all.
Should one look to,
unfortunately,
but,
you see, I'm so much better documented on...
I wanted to see you. But all the same, one has to bear in mind, doesn't one, that there's a different person earlier on.
Yes.
And
they used to go, in her younger days, she used to go off with a bunch of her friends to Switzerland, and there are lots of photographs of groups of them climbing and walking.
Mm.
And her brother had a cottage on, I think it was his, not the family's, on Dartmoor, and they used to go and spend a lot of time there. They were all of them always on the move.
Mm.
They enjoyed travelling about.
What about reading? I mean, apart from the periodicals we've mentioned.
Well, she used to get books out of the library. She used to rarely read biographies, I think, and travel books mostly. I doubt if she ever read a novel. Mm.
And talking when she had the chance, I suppose.
Oh, yes. She was a great talker. A great talker. My parents were a little bit... My father was a little bit afraid of her. He didn't like intellectual women at all. And I think he was really afraid I was going to turn into one. and he was at Oxford at the same time that she was at LMH, and used to see her occasionally. But I had the impression he always... I mean, he was fond of her, but he definitely was a bit frightened of her. And thought that she was going to start questioning him about the international situation, in which he took a normal interest, but no more than that, and that she didn't ask him to start an argument he wouldn't be able to keep up, I think. And she was also regarded by my parents, I mean, this is, because my views of her during that period were coloured by my parents' views, obviously, and she was frightfully unpractical in ordinary life. She used to go down and see her dear old sisters at Newbury and, with the best intentions, and get them all stirred up because she tried to sort of rehang the curtains or something like that.
just that she had a sort of wider vision than they had, since because she'd broken out of the family.
And she wasn't interested in domestic things at all.
It's a very sort of, in a way, very limited life, and simultaneously a very broad life.
Yes.
An odd combination.
Yes.
Isn't it, really?
I mean,
very limited in the sense that she doesn't have to do her own housework, and she, you know, she's not interested in dress, and she doesn't cook, and all that sort of thing. And she has got to earn her living.
Yes.
At all, because she's got a private income. And yet, on the other hand, so it's narrow in that way. But on the other hand, it's very broad, in the sense of travelling and international
yes.
public life
yes.
and all that sort of thing.
Yes.
I mean, it's an interesting
yes.
combination,
yes.
isn't it? But she was rather difficult to handle, or she had to manage.
Yes, she did. She liked to get her own way. Now, another thing in her life which has just come to me, this cousin who helped me so much with her, she was brought up in Ireland, was very shy and very timid, and used to come over occasionally to England and stay with Kathleen. And then during the war she came, yes, both her parents were still alive then, and she was young enough to be drafted into the women's army, which she hated, I think. And at the end of the war she stayed on in this country, and Kathleen asked her to live with her. And she thought, I've now got somebody to look after me for the rest of my life. And she stood it for several years, and really was very, she, after her day's work, she was she worked eventually in the Conservative Central Office. She was supposed to buy all the food and do all the quick cooking. And after her mother died, she decided, egged on by, I think, some friends, to buy a flat. And when she told Kathleen, she said she, poor dear, she was, I say, a very nervous person. It took her weeks and weeks and weeks to summon up courage to tell her. And when she did, Kathleen was furious. She rang me up, what do you think? Mary's bought a flat and she's leaving me. And she, obviously it was a sense of desolation. I've got to find some other way.
Mm.
She forgave her. Mm. And
it's rather sad, isn't it, really, in a way?
But while this poor Mary lived there, she really had a dog's life.
Mm. Sad in both ways.
In both ways.
In both dimensions, yes.
But I think, I'm sure she was awfully good to her. She helped her. She would have gone back to a dreary life in Ireland if this, Kathleen hadn't helped her, I think, and encouraged her. But she was really quite frightened of her.
Yes, Kathleen seems to have had plenty of friends, though.
Oh, she had lots of friends.
As you talk, you mention friends.
Yes, no, she had lots of friends. And there people were always going in to see her. I think that very few people really saw the harsher side of her, you see. One only saw it if one saw her absolutely regularly.
As with all of us.
Yes.
Or at least perhaps I should speak for myself.
Yes, I mean,
obviously.
Many people would be absolutely astonished at to hear that she could be sometimes rather unkind to people.
Mm.
And it certainly wasn't deliberate unkindness. It was a lack of imagination that here was this girl years younger than her, who couldn't really invite anyone to the flat. There wasn't room for it.
Mm. Yes, I was really wondering about that too. Did Kathleen sort of have many people to entertain in her flat or house? I remember I had rather nice tea, a Victorian tea.
Yes, she'd have people to tea, but she'd entertain them at her club.
Mm.
I don't think she'd ever tried to lay on another. She had people to stay. She was quite a host of people wanting to come and stay in London. She'd put them up quite willingly.
Mm.
But I think they were probably expected to cook the meals if they had any.
Yes.
Yes, and certainly her entertaining. She was a member, belonged to the University Women's Club.
Mm. And she very much was a university woman.
Yes.
Did you think? I mean, you think of her like that.
Yes.
Yes.
And she used to go and spend Christmas there. This is, I feel rather badly that I'm telling you all nasty things about her. But
I wouldn't want to encourage you to do that. I mean, it's just they stick in the memory, probably.
Yeah, well, She used to go and spend Christmas there while her faithful child had a bit of a holiday.
In the University Women's Club?
Yes. And the last year that when she applied to go there, they said they couldn't have her. And the thing was that they felt she was too much of a responsibility. She was getting too old. And they wrote quite a nice letter saying they couldn't give her her usual comfort of breakfast in bed because of the chores. And she wouldn't accept this. And I had a dreadful time over this. I rang up the secretary and said, and she said, well, the truth is, she really is too much trouble now. We cannot take responsibility for her. We are very short-staffed. And last time she was here, some people did complain that she was too old to be there. And she was furious with them. They said they promised her a room, and then they'd gone back on it. And in the end, she went and stayed with some friends, I think. But.
Well, these things happen to you when you're old and alone, don't they?
Yes.
You just get in these sort of.
And no, she was very fortunate. She had an elderly couple of very devoted friends who lived in Surrey, and she used to go and stay with them. And then she also used to go every year. Now, this is not so strictly relevant to her. During the war, her sisters had as an evacuee a very nice young war widow with a baby. And they were frightfully good to this young woman, and she became almost like a daughter to them. And she was very devoted to them, and she was very, very good to Kathleen, and used to see her regularly. And she used to go away on holiday with her for a week, and Kathleen paying her expenses, I think, but she took her car and drove her and generally looked after her. And Kathleen took a great interest in the young man when he grew up and married and saw his first child before she died, and there was a close connection there. But again, the last time they went on holiday, this woman said to me, I can't do it again. She's really not fit to go and stay in the hotel any longer.
And she drove a car, did she?
Well, originally, but not in my recollection.
I see, yes. Because I've got a vague recollection, I may be wrong here, of reading something about, I think it's Dame Kathleen, at the age of 90, driving somebody's motor.
That's in that thing of Philip Noel Baker's.
Yes.
No, it was a Motomer.
Motomer, that's right. She said, I've not had such a fun since I was 70.
Yes. But no, she gave up driving long before she was 70.
Because it was quite a thing for a woman to drive, really, I suppose,
yes.
At that time, wasn't it?
Yeah,
one takes
yes,
for granted
yes.
now. But in your dealings with her, you really did find her very independent, did you?
Oh, very.
She would
very.
Just do things
yes.
that she wanted to do, and
yes,
that was
yes,
that.
Yes,
really.
Yes,
yes. Which goes with a sort of admirable preparedness to look after yourself.
Yes.
Isn't it? I mean, it's the thing one wants.
Oh, absolutely.
In a way.
Yes.
But
yes.
On the other hand, it can be inconvenient if they really aren't able to do things
yes.
themselves.
No, she was very, very independent indeed.
Did she have any sort of religious belief at all, do you think? I mean, or had she shed that?
Well, I think she shed it. Her doctor said to me once, it's such a pity that she has no religious belief. And she was certainly very reluctant. I mean, I talk frequently of my approaching death, whenever it's going to be, and tell, everybody I want to be cremated, and I don't view it, maybe as I get older, I will view it with alarm, but it doesn't alarm me. But she didn't like, it was only when very near the end that she began to talk, well, perhaps I haven't got much longer to live. She was determined to go on living, this great determination. And her doctor certainly had the impression that she had no. On the other hand, she had a lot of religious books, but I think they were more Royden's than she'd inherited.
Yes. Because I imagine they must have talked to each other a lot about religion. I mean, you could not.
Yes, she certainly wasn't a churchgoer.
Is there anything else about her that you think one ought to bring out, really, just to sort of bring her to life again? I mean, we've talked a large range of things about her, haven't we, really?
No, I don't think so. I'm trying to think of these various the letters that she read, they all wrote to each other, were extraordinarily factual and dull, really.
And you said that she did write a lot of letters. That's another thing, wasn't it? What, to her relatives?
Yes,
or...
and her friends. She had tremendous... She had friends all over the world, a great many friends in America. And they used to write long, long letters to each other about the world situation and what they thought should be done. And there were various leading American feminists who also were in the world of international affairs. And they kept up this tremendous correspondence.
Mm. Instead of a telephone, I suppose, I mean, a lot of people just would phone up, even across the Atlantic.
Yes,
I mean, it's amazing what people do now.
And she had friends in Australia and New Zealand, not many on the continent. There was a Belgian family who'd come as refugees in the First World War to her parents' house, and well, her mother's house after her father's death, of course, when they were living in England. And she kept up with them and their descendants. They used to come to see her when they came to London still.
So I meant to ask you about languages. She could presumably speak French.
She spoke French and German.
Yes. I mean, she wasn't a wizard at languages particularly, but was what one would expect from a well-educated...
She could read them quite. She had quite a strong English accent, but she could make herself understood perfectly easily.
Yes. The thing that strikes me very much, puts myself off now, she wasn't ever Labour then, she was a Liberal. An old-fashioned liberal, I think. Your
yes. And now, I was working for Philip Goldbaker when he got back into Parliament in the by-election of 1936, and she came up and spoke for him then. It was quite an important by-election. It was when Thomas had to resign.
Oh, yes, yes.
And it was quite a fairly tough one, but absolutely everybody who knew him and all the sort of leading members of the Labour Party came and spoke, and she came and spoke at that, and as far as I remember, described herself as Liberal, but I don't think she ever joined the Liberal Party. I think she probably voted Liberal.
So Liberal with a small L,
yes,
probably,
yes,
in general.
Yes.
And that, you think, moved actually towards Conservatism towards the end
yes,
of her life?
Yes, yes.
Actually with voting Conservative?
I should think so.
Yeah.
I should think almost certainly so. I don't know that she actually told me so, but I'm pretty sure.
Mm. Did she actually sort of make a thing about voting? I mean, was she...
I don't know.
Keen on voting, and one sometimes finds with suffragettes and so on that they attach tremendous importance actually to going along and casting.
No, I don't think so. I really wouldn't know about that, and I mean I must have been in contact with her in some of it.
Because I came across a super suffragette in.